This is Elizabeth Van Ostrand, professional internet hobo.
This is Timothy Tilene Lawton, without a title.
This is our fourth attempted recording of our second episode in our series on integrity, truth-seeking, and effective altruism.
And I'm suddenly curious on behalf of our audience, why has it taken so many chances to record this?
The first one was an interview that was just too podcasty. Like, we didn't get to anything real depth. It wasn't a real conversation. We've then recorded this conversation two times already. One was kind of always intended to be the rough draft. We then re-recorded immediately, and there were a bunch of things. You can say what you didn't like about it. I left the gain on the microphone way too high, and so there was a terrible hiss throughout the entire episode. You asked a question during the episode that we'll get to again that I gave out like kind of a grab bag of answers to, and I figured out what my theme was a couple of days ago.
Yeah, related to that, I expect my answers will also be better having had the messy version first, and I do feel a little bit torn about re-recording when we're expecting to talk about the same thing, because there's something nice about the authenticity of the first cut, or like getting to hear the off-the-cuff reactions.
My take is that the raw cut is terrible, and I would never listen to it. It's too meandering. I hate the two people meander along form of podcast. I've always aimed for pretty highly edited. But another reason we're re-recording is a mutual friend, Mylan Griffs, listened to the first episode and pushed back pretty hard on the amount of editing and also just the sound quality, that it had a kind of clipped Frankenstein quality to it. And so we wanted to do another shot at having it sound natural and be a conversation and not need so much editing. But also, full disclosure, we've had this conversation three times already.
Great.
So, last episode was all about my EA journey and disillusionment. Do you want to talk about yours a little bit?
Yeah, that sounds good. Started thinking like a consequentialist freshman year of college when my friend Jared gave me a book called Practical Ethics by Peter Singer. And that, along with the other books I was reading that year and Thinking Shifts, led me to both become a vegan less than a year after I'd heard the term for the first time, and also become more politically active and care about politics. Got actually involved in the EA registered trademark in 2013 when I joined GiveWell. Have worked mostly in EA adjacent orgs since then, GiveWell and then CIFAR, and then Anthropic, which I quit a year ago. I guess the closest thing I have to a disillusionment story with EA is that a couple of years ago, I started realizing what spirituality was for and realized that I actually think I'm a spiritual creature. And secretly, I think everyone is too, but I think talking about what that word even means is confusing and hard. And along with that shift in my own self-identity or whatever, the way I see the world and the way I relate to it and myself, has also come with having new opinions about like what EA is missing or might be in its sort of communal blind spot.
Before we get into the blind spots, can you tell me some things you like about EA or why you think there is a core worth preserving?
Yeah, so I feel like the idea at the heart of EA that I still love just as much as ever is how do we do good effectively? To the extent that we believe there are some things in the world that are worth causing to happen more, or things that are worth causing to happen less, in a sort of non-personal way, like zoomed out to the global scale, then how do we do those things effectively together?
So that sounds to me like you like EA the philosophy.
Yeah, that's the philosophy
side.
But it's
not about the EA, the movement, at all.
Right, so then I describe the community as, or the movement, those are interestingly different. I would describe it both ways, but as community formed around trying to do that, trying to like implement that philosophy together. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I love the earnestness and the intelligence and the friendliness of the people in the movement. I love the way that I feel like the community creates a professional environment where it's easier than it is otherwise in the outside world to like to create startups that are, you know, EA aligned, and to find a pool of people that's sharing that philosophy and generally more competent and intelligent than average people, probably.
It's interesting. There were a couple of comments in response to the last episode that defended EA the principle, which the only objection I have to EA principles is that they're not EA principles, they're my principles. I had them first, so did a lot of other people. When I say EA, I always mean the movement, and it's the movement that I gave up on.
I assumed that was true, because we haven't been arguing about EA principles at all.
What about some of the blind spots?
I notice I feel some sadness as I'm thinking about my own career trying to improve the world and about the trajectory of the EA community. I feel a lot of sadness about the amount of like effort that's gone to waste, in particular because it's such earnest effort. It's so beautiful to be part of a community where people are really trying to do the best they can and wanting to make that the best for the whole world and not just, and you know, not just themselves. In both my own career in EA and in EA as a community, I see a trajectory of earnest good faith enthusiasm, building of momentum for a decade or more, and you know, we had a lot of success starting a bunch of cool organizations and raising a bunch of money, and I think we made some big mistakes, and I think we've earnestly tried to acknowledge and fix those mistakes, but I don't think we've yet finished learning from our mistakes. What I want to see, and what I get honestly more hopeful about and excited about from talking with you, is I want to see us finishing that process, and I want us to like make some big updates about the nature of the world and what it means to be human, and therefore what it should mean to be a quote-unquote good EA, to the point of our debate about EA diaspora or renaissance. I do think that EA's ability to learn from its mistakes does affect and should affect whether a renaissance is even possible or desirable. And yeah, I guess I'll pause there.
Thank you. I think that was beautifully put. We've talked about why I became pessimistic on that process. I would love to hear more about what you think the process could be in order to get EA learning what it needs to.
Two answers come to mind off the cuff. One is that I want all EAs and all EA institutions that haven't already done this to really like to do a soul search on what their mission or EA mission is, and whether they have sufficient evidence to believe they have an important blind spot, and that's worth addressing and prioritizing above, you know, work like expanding our resources.
Soul searching is one of those things that's easy to fake, and including to yourself. When you personally are soul searching, how do you know when you're doing it for real, or what's the process of doing it for real? Or I guess I just want specifics on this, and the only thing I think anyone can give specifics on is about themselves.
I guess I notice that I'm starting a soul searching process when I've been usually like stunned or slapped in the face or something that has me give pause and realize that large, like the big stakes are at play, and choosing the path is more important in the short term than making progress on the path. Knowing, if I was trying to describe how I know when to do that, like in some ways it's a different question about how do I notice when I'm starting to do that versus if I'm trying to give someone tips on how they might notice that they should be due for one.
Let me ask a different question.
Go ahead.
What does soul searching look like when you do it?
Taking a step back, taking a period of rest. Things like self-awareness and centeredness, or like a positive meditative state over things like progress on the plan.
What do you think it might look like when that was applied at a movement-wide scale?
I would expect to see a significant heightened amount of discussion, most obviously amongst the like leaders or power brokers of the community, but also all, you know, of course, all the stakeholders. I would expect to see a deprioritization of instrumental goals such as fundraising and recruiting. And I would expect to see institutions, you know, scheduling things like offsite retreats with their teams in order to reorient and organically let new direction or wisdom bubble up over things like scheduling intense heads down periods of creation.
EA is in some senses very open about criticism. And there was a lot of discussion post-FTX that I didn't see anything particularly valuable happen. I think it was a lot of hand-wringing and people with no stakes or information having very strong opinions. I think one or two power brokers spoke publicly, and I was not really happy with either of them. Basically, I think it's easy for people to follow the form of what you're discussing, but not the function.
Yeah, I guess I have more hope of... I think I would instead try to share the insights or updates that I've had in my parallel journey and try to communicate, like, why I think similar updates are needed in the community, and if other power brokers ended up agreeing with me, then they would take appropriate actions to update the behaviors of themselves and the institutions they're part of. I don't expect to have like great things to say about like what institutions should do.
In our previous attempt at recording, you talked about an integrity vanguard, which I think could play a really strong role in something like movement-wide soul searching. Could you tell us more about that idea that was originally yours?
The version of it that's currently in my head, I would call a co-creation out of the last conversation, but it's inspired partly by my learning this year about more about the structure of applied Islam, where you have lots of imams. Imams are these, you know, like the priests of Islam. There's a very decentralized structure where lots of different imams are just sort of authorities on applying, you know, the teachings of the religion to everyday life. And that's especially helpful given that, you know, the Quran was written, you know, over 1,000 years ago, and things are a bit different about modern human life. And so it's not always obvious how to apply the bits of wisdom that the religion itself is most confident about. So you could imagine this in EA working if you had people that are considered essentially a kind of elder in the community, a kind of respected position, not that everyone agrees with, of course, but these are people that have a solid enough grasp in EA values that that people find it useful to seek counsel from them about how to deal with tricky questions, which might be, you know, what we would think of as moral questions, but they also might be strategic questions, and in fact would probably often be things that are in the overlap, because so much of what EA does is in that overlap. The part of the idea of why this might be useful is because I think that part of the thing that we want to get better at in EA is integrity. And in fact, arguably, maybe that's the only thing that I think we need in order to justify and cause a kind of renaissance that I'm thinking of. And integrity is a thing that can particularly benefit from triangulation through third parties that, you know, ideally aren't clouded by a bunch of conflict of interest, or at least less than you yourself are.
Good luck with that.
So as with imams, I don't think there should be a goal of being totally free of conflict of interest. I think that's just sort of like a hopeless task. But I still think triangulation is helpful. And part of it is like separation of powers, but even more so, it's like easier to see blind spots through reflection.
I want to go on a tangent about the concept of conflict of interests. I think when I see it come up, it often feels like people are relating to the person with a potential conflict as a grown-up who has an obligation to be perfectly fair.
Mm.
And that if this person cut slack for people they know, that's like the teacher giving a cookie to another student and punishing you when you did the same thing. And one of the things I really want is for line level EAs to stop viewing power broker EAs as the grown-ups. And one of the things I like about the Iman idea is it's at least compatible with, you know, you have a dilemma, you talk to 5 different imams and use it to process what you actually think is right, rather than you go to a grown-up and get told what to do.
Right. I think it is very important for EA culture and for any human culture, as far as I'm aware, for us to encourage a strong like moral compass in everyone, such that even people that aren't, you know, marshaling any significant amount of power beyond themselves are taking full responsibility for their own behavior and figuring out what is right. And it's not considered cheating to consult with other people, and it's actually recommended.
But also it is considered cheating to defer to other people instead of coming up with your own answer that you will stand behind.
Right. And of course, there are cases where I don't think we would consider it cheating to defer a particular sub-decision to someone that has more experience or whatever, and that we trust a lot. But that itself is a choice.
I know I said this last time, but it feels like it's coming up again. I think EA is full of people who had a deep-seated need to follow orders and have the grown-up make their decisions for them, and were ordered to think independently.
And that created a kind of conflict?
That they tried to resolve by going to a place that said loudly, we're thinking independently, and here's what you should do. I think it also created people who expect to be praised for thinking independently.
Mm.
You don't get praised for being weird. You get praised for being successful, and some of the ways to get there root through being weird.
I imagine that many of us that feel similarly grew up at some point became disillusioned with the adults and decided the existing adults were terrible, and then were excited to find a community of people that agreed that the existing authorities are bad adults and are trying to create our own adulthood. And as we might predict, it has one of the sort of weaknesses of this phenomenon is it has created a community of people that is prone to project authority even when it isn't there, whatever that means, or it shouldn't be there.
Or the people it's being projected on don't want it.
All of these things. And so here we are.
I feel like we keep just missing each other. Where you'll say things like, they wanted grown-ups and I'll nod along, and then we decided to co-create adulthood, and I don't think that's what happened at all. I think people wanted to stay children and were looking for new grown-ups with ineffective altruism.
Mm. I guess I'm thinking of, like, the development of GiveWell and OpenPhil, for example, as at trying to create adult-level wisdom on where to donate if you want to give to global poverty, for example.
Yes, I think that is a great example of becoming your own grown-up. I think a lot of the people following GiveWell want to relate to it as a grown-up.
Yeah.
And I think GiveWell equivocates about whether it wants that.
Whether it wants to be an adult?
Whether it wants people to defer to it like that.
Oh, well, it's because there is some of both, right? Because it exists in part because there's an obvious efficiency. It's a sort of natural monopoly. Like, you would want... You want there to be a resource for... But also you want people to maintain their own compass. There's a particular way it feels for me to be aligned. My hands did air quotes. I don't love that word or term, but it is a big part of EA culture. and it feels meaningful. Like, when I feel, let's say, internally aligned, then... I feel like a clarity on who I believe I am, what I think I'm doing, and it's easier to relate to other people and institutions around me because I kind of know where I stand in the universe, so it's easier to know how I want to stand in relation to others. And I don't feel that level of clarity with NEA as a movement right now. I actually think, in some sense, we had it more, let's say, like 5 years ago. Like, the problem isn't that we developed new blind spots so much as, so I don't think it's necessarily a problem that there's less of a sense of clarity of mission, because I think part of why there's less clarity of mission is because we've gained evidence for ourselves about blind spots that exist.
And one might say we've grown up.
We've grown up. Yeah, we've
I had so much clarity when I worked at Wave.
Ah.
And then I got AI-pilled and no longer knew what the right thing to do was, and everything is confusing, and I miss that certainty so much.
Right. So I want... Yeah, I love talking about this without so much the lens of what should have happened, or like with not without the so much the like blame or judgment frame, but instead trying to understand the phenomena of where we're at, mm-hmm. or including where we have been. And it seems like you and I agree that there was a clarity of vision and mission in EA up through something like 5 years ago. I don't know when the timeline is. There was more of it.
I think, like, similar to when I was at Wave, like, I had clarity of mission, but I was wrong.
Right. One thing I'm curious about is, like, how much of the wrongness you would attribute to the phenomena where if you have a normal amount of blind spots, but then you acquire more resources and power and responsibility, then those blind spots lead to larger and larger errors and mistakes.
I think that happened, and I think that was a separate phenomenon from suddenly getting confused about what the best thing to do was, because new options were introduced. I used to love going to EA Global and seeing all these other great ideas that I was delighted to not work on because my thing was so good.
And then what? And then, but that's no longer
true. That's no longer true. the biggest shift was because I started worrying more about AI and existential risk, and there wasn't any equivalent of Wave for existential risk. There was nothing that felt like a slam dunk that I was a great fit for. I separately think I have been on this journey of becoming more powerful, and that's, I feel like that's created problems mostly through decision paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my internal experience is that I am clearing blind spots ahead of increasing my power, to the point one might think I was holding myself back until I felt safe having it.
Seems like a reasonable ordering. The part that I most worry about is the holding back, not, you know, depending on what that means. I guess it's the opposite of fake it till you make it in some way.
Fake it till you make it people are cheating. And a grown-up should intervene.
I wonder if we'd benefit at this point from you paraphrasing where we're at.
We've talked a lot about sort of the concept of grown-uphood and how people in EA relate to it. And I think there's maybe a chronic talking past each other where you are talking about your high-status EA leader friends, and I am mostly talking about line-level EAs.
Yeah, I think we should be talking about both. Do you think the integrity problem is mostly in the line levels?
Jesus, no. But I think the line levels are making it harder for the power brokers to have integrity, at least in public, by being a terrible audience.
And of course, in theory, to the extent that we or power brokers have power in the community, we should be able to, in theory, shift the culture on and address problems like that at scale.
I think what you do is you stop recruiting so many people under false pretenses.
And can you remind me what the false pretenses are that we're recruiting people under now?
For example, a lot of people were genuinely shocked to find out about the EA Castle in Europe. Because they felt they had been promised a movement that was thrifty and did direct good, and this was too nebulous a plan, and they were paying money to have nice things, and that was wrong. And in Obenfil's defense on this, they published a couple of years ago that they were shifting to hits-based giving. They weren't trying to be particularly legible. And they don't take outside money specifically because they don't want to be beholden to other people. And yet a lot of people were shocked by this because they'd been recruited with different promises.
Right, so at the very least a communication problem.
Yes, I don't think the college groups or outreach in general emphasized we give our friends millions of dollars to do crazy shit because it might work.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think that's a great part of the movement.
Yeah, me too.
Now, this is where I differ with a lot of EA critics, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
They are mad about the castle for more traditional reasons, like, Jesus fuck, you spent so much money on a castle.
Right.
Whereas I'm mad at EA for having people who think they get to veto the castle. And, like, you can think it's a bad idea, but I don't like this knee-jerk, you can't spend money on nicer speculative things.
One thing that I got excited about last time you and I chatted was the idea of building a roadmap together, trying to build a roadmap together for an EA renaissance, where, in my mind, the roadmap will have succeeded if we have an EA community that empowers its members, helps the world, and maybe that's it, but is like high integrity or something.
I wanted a group that was highly truth-seeking, highly altruistic, and was good for the people in it.
I like that. I'm happy with that as the like goal of the roadmap. And recently I've been thinking of roadmaps as problem sets, thanks to a class that Logan had a few years ago. And in particular, so we've named the success condition of the problem set, which we could call the last problem of the problem set. The goal in designing the problem set is to fill in the rest of the problems that might want to come before the final step, but we can start fleshing out what are steps in between that where each time you add a step between two steps, the step in between is more reachable than the next step. And in some sense, the invitation to like the designers of the problem set is to focus on whichever step has the hardest jump and to see if you can add steps in between to the problem set such that the least plausible jump in the problem set is as plausible as possible.
Here is what I think one of the very hard problems is. Effective altruism runs on what I want to say is open fill money, but is in fact good ventures money. And if you want to change EA, you have to have additional sources of funding.
Because one should always have multiple sources of funding, or because good ventures funding is not good for as the sole fund of EA?
It's certainly not good as the sole fund of EA. So I think, one, it's just funding diversification is always good. Two, good ventures pulled back on a bunch of spending recently that one could uncharitably describe as they didn't want to fund things that were getting and yelled at parties.
I also want more sources of funding for EA, sort of for independent reasons. And of course, Good Ventures would be super excited as well to have.
Yeah, no, they've said they want that.
Yeah, great. So if we can create a problem in our problem set that is additional large funding sources for EA that's independent of Good Ventures.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet. How do you think we should do that?
I think that's a Timothy job.
So I guess one reason I might agree with you that it feels like a Timothy-shaped job is because I feel more optimism that we might be able to do this than I've heard from other people. One reason I have hope that we could solve the problem of new sources of funding is that there are still many multimillionaires and at least several billionaires that are, you know, aligned with EA values and have been donors to EA causes that are not part of Good Ventures. And I imagine, you know, I know some of them. I imagine some of them, not just the ones I know, would love to have more of their money that's sitting in bank accounts, sitting instead in the hands of people that are ready and willing to do more good with it, including you. One cool thing about the problem set framing for me is it can be a helpful way to kind of throw out skeletal structure of a roadmap. One sort of illustrative problem that I propose for our mainline problem set is we get into the hands of Elizabeth or a new nonprofit that Elizabeth is running $1 billion, or maybe Elizabeth and I are co-running or something, but I think Elizabeth should be CEO and I'm the fundraiser or something else. And part of why I think this is a helpful illustrative example is I claim that that would be, that problem is like closer to having solved the alternative sources of funding than it is to where we are now. In other words, even though that is such little structure that I've described, all I've done is I've named two people and an amount of money. That's all I've done. But I claim that actually makes me, it makes me more optimistic when I realize that, like, A, I actually would trust that to be good for the world, and B, I actually like know people that have enough money that and the right values that they might plausibly agree with me on that, and if they did, then presumably they would give you or us the money. And so what do you think about that?
I'm trying to recreate the amount of awe I had last time you said this. Timothy has been trying to work me up into thinking how I could spend more and more money for months now. And I don't know, part of me is really excited about it. I think I have an appropriate amount of fear about it, too. That what if this goes wrong, or what if I'm bad at it? But, you know, in the confidence of the recording booth, I think I'd be amazing at this.
I do, too. And, you know, part of why it feels easy for me to say that is...
I think I'd be amazing at this eventually.
Well, right. And, but eventually, yes, but also, like, appropriately quickly, that I think giving you that budget sooner than later actually makes sense. Like, of course, why not first give you, like, $10 million, if we're not in too big of a rush, which, you know, I, in general, encourage patience as a virtue we should be leaning into even more. But yeah, like, you know, we should give you, you know, $10 million or $100 million. And within 3 to 6 months, I claim that if someone gave you $100 million, then within 6 months, someone, they and or someone else would want to give you a billion instead. And in fact, there you go. You have a automatically generated self-scaling problem set. Like, get Elizabeth $1 million, and then as soon as seeing how she spends that money gives you the confidence to give her $10 million, do that, and then $100 million, and then a billion. There's my four-step problem set to having an alternative.
All of those are on your plate. It's, I got to figure out how to spend it somehow.
Yeah, and, you know, what? Well, why don't you tell us what your first couple steps might be if you did receive $1 billion?
One of the reasons I wanted to re-record this was so that I could give a better answer to this question. Last time, I gave a bunch of specifics, and I think what I actually want is to gather a bunch more information. Like, I think what I would do is put out a call for applications, listing the things I think are important. Two, find people to split the money with who I trust as grant makers. Three, it's interesting. When I thought about this as the EA Renaissance Fund a couple of weeks ago, I had some specific things on reforming EA rather than building a new community. And this time the question was framed much more in terms of the Elizabeth Van Nostrand Do Good Things Fund. And yet I still maybe want to do the things I would have done to reform EA merely for the information value, and if they work, that's fantastic. And if I was trying to reform EA, the first thing I would want is more information. I don't actually think I know enough about the internal workings of organizations or what trade-offs they make to tell them what to do differently in any particular decision.
Or could I restate that as, like, to have an opinion about what they're doing wrong, if anything?
So I feel competent to say what is going wrong on a systemic level or a probabilistic level, but not for any one decision. Because the information just often isn't public. And so what I would like to start with is information gathering. And I've thought of a couple of specifics to do this. One of the things that really inhibits information sharing is people have all their career capital locked up in effective altruism, and if they're pushed out, they're screwed. And I actually think that's probably less likely than they think it is, but, you know, if you think it's a 50% chance and it's all actually a 10% chance, you're not going to take the chance. Mm-hmm. So I would love to have a whistleblower fund that came with enough money that people could reestablish themselves in a different community,
like a
or a different
policy
career.
For
yeah,
the community.
A severance package, basically. My understanding is one of the reasons EA orgs don't publish things, don't publish as much information as we might like, is they're busy and publishing is time-consuming, especially when it gets torn apart online. And so what I would like to do is give them the resources, or ideally embed vetted people into the different orgs to do the write-ups for them. And this would be a cooperative relationship. They'd probably have veto power because that's the only way you're going to get enough information. But, you know, maybe there's some $20 bills lying on the ground of information everyone wants to be public but doesn't have the time.
I love that idea.
And I, like, more cynically, I do think that when people say it's too much, we don't have the time to write it up, often they mean, and we don't like what will happen if we write it up. So this doesn't solve every problem, but, you know, we've all had the experience of having the angel of our better nature come up against time constraints. And if you can relax the time constraints, it really is easier for the better angel to do its job.
Agreed. And I think this is one of the many benefits of having more patience or spaciousness in the movement, although easier said than done.
Yeah. I complain a lot about EA recruiting efforts. It sure would be nice to actually observe those and see what specifically I think is going wrong, or maybe I'm completely in the wrong here. I'd especially like to check the college recruiting.
Right, and also it would be good. My impression is, I think you said that most of your information about the EA recruiting is a couple years old.
It's like 2 years out of date, which is, I think, basically up to date unless I actively go out and hunt down the information myself.
Totally. But maybe, like, one version is maybe we could invite someone on the podcast that actually is involved in it or something. But
yeah, that's not insane. Man, I just want to talk to more people. I think there's been a lot of problems around job applications and job distribution. And I would like to get more information on the applicant side, on the organization side. And what I suspect will come out of that is a document that sets expectations better. The EA orgs tend to be very encouraging to people to apply because they want as wide a net as possible. It feels good to encourage people and bad to discourage people. And they're not paying the costs for it.
Like the disappointment and the time involved in applications?
Yeah.
Well, I guess they pay part of that, but there's externalities.
There's externalities that they are not paying for. And maybe we can correct that, or maybe we can reduce the bycatch by setting out more accurate expectations.
I guess it's technically only an externality if there's, or something kind of like an externality, if the applicants are misled, like, or have a false expectation. Otherwise, they're just making
a choice.
A bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is why I think this one is probably an expectation setting issue.
Cool.
I would like to do exit interviews with people who quiet fade from EA. Right now, on EA Forum, you almost exclusively hear from people who are very upset about something in effective altruism. And the people who write up why they quit a movement on that movement's own website are upset, and I hate to say it, but often it's emotionally unbalanced because most people who are very upset still don't write up that upsetness and put it on the internet. Obvious question here is, Elizabeth, you wrote up your reasons for quitting in really quite a lot of detail. Are you emotionally unstable? And the answer is, I was given a grant for a project that was originally trying to save EA, not about why I quit. It was writing the last paper in that grant that made me realize I had to quit.
Yeah. Great. And It sounds like, and you had even said, like, this is an information gathering enterprise. Like, there's, on the high level, you said you were going to be, you'd, like, put out a request for proposals for grants, and you'd also look for re-granters that you would share the money with. But then also part of what you'd expect to see, you'd want to see grants in or be expecting to re-grant to is efforts around around how would you say that, yeah, what the mission would be to improve EA? Is that, how would you say it?
So to use your problem step analogy, like if step six is improve EA, uh-huh, step five is gather enough information to fill in the sub problems
right
in step six.
Right. Okay. And how, but it sounds like, but you are already convinced that there is a problem. I'd love to hear you say, like, what convinces you that there are problems that need to be solved, or how would you describe the problems?
Yeah. So we've talked at great length about the problems I see in vegan advocacy, and then the fact that everyone else seems fine with it and isn't pushing back. And there's a lot of things I see that I wish were getting pushback. To use a very recent bite the hand that feeds you example, EA Infrastructure Fund recently funded us for the podcast, which is fantastic, and we're very appreciative. They recently were planning on publishing a blog post where listing out applications they would like to fund. Section one was, I believe, integrity and epistemics. And because we were listed as an example in that, they sent us the post ahead of time to make sure we were fine with our mention. The next section was brand and reputation. And you can imagine how I felt about this. Knowing it was biting the hand that fed me, but feeling compelled to anyway, I wrote back saying, you know, I don't like this section. I think you should be aiming to inform, not boost up EA's reputation beyond what it deserves. And to the credit of the person whose name I'm forgetting right now, he in one sense took the concerns very seriously. He didn't get defensive. He asked follow-up questions. And in response, they added the following paragraph to the brand and reputation page, which says, I've focused on addressing the challenges of poor brand and reputation, but of course the ideal would be to actually fix any underlying issues that have bad consequences and in turn cause poor reputation. Proposals relating to these are of course welcome. Which I'm almost having a heart attack over how much that is admitting he wants improvement in reputation, whether or not it's accurate. And I didn't see anyone push back on that in the comments.
To play devil's advocate here, he could argue that currently the reputation of EA is worse than Honest Reputation would have it.
I agree. If he had said a different thing, I would have reacted differently.
Yeah, if it seems clear that if there are problems that, because they are understood correctly by the outside world, are causing reputation problems, that one should not fix the reputation problem without fixing the underlying problem.
Yeah, like, this was, in my mind, worse because it partially acknowledged that the problems were real. Like, I think it would have been easier to interpret him as thinking we want an accurate reputation, but, you know, forgetting to spell that out if he hadn't included that last paragraph.
Okay, to try to restate my devil's advocate argument, isn't it possible that what he meant is there are some real problems in EA that cause reputation problems, and there are some not actually real problems that where there are reputation associated reputation problems because people are hallucinating a real problem that there isn't one?
And if our grant-making foundation ever has a brand problem, we will be really careful to spell that out. And there's the additional problem of, okay, maybe that is what he believes. Is it true? We don't let people decide what their reputation should be among other people.
Right. Right. But we do let them put their best foot forward in an honest way.
We do, and I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah. If he thinks, oh, our reputation is too low, therefore having people think better of us is more accurate. You don't actually get to make that call. Maybe other people just disagree with you.
Totally. So how much better would you have felt? Like, what percentage of your attention would it have resolved if this section had been titled Best Foot Forward and it had said, we believe that some of EA's reputation problems are due to true problems in the movement that we still need to correct. We also believe that we're not putting our best foot forward as well as we could be, and...
Well, so there's two problems here. One is what the person at EAIF said, and the other is the fact that no one else pushed back. Okay. And what you said would substantially solve the problem of...
The first one.
The second one, that no one had pushed back.
Oh.
Because I think that makes the problem harder to spot. Given what I believe about EA, I would have done a Straussian reading either way.
What's a Straussian reading?
I would have said, well, okay, that's what you're saying, but I think the effect this is going to have is to improve EA reputation independent of worth.
Cool. Yeah, thank you. That now I feel ready to, now I'm more enrolled in just like being on your team and like treating this as evidence of, or at least symbolic of, this part of the integrity issue in EA, to kind of tie this into our zoomed out thing where we're working on a problem set, and in one of the problem tracks that we were creating is about alternate funding source for EA, and our current version of solving that routes through a like Elizabeth Does Good fund.
It might also funnel in part through giving open film money that doesn't come from Good Ventures.
And then I'm hearing that you're also mentioning this sort of like alternate, like additional, perhaps parallel track of the problem set that is routing through resources to make it easier for individuals and institutions within EA to have high integrity.
So there's, I think, two separate tracks there. One of which is make it easier for EA to have high integrity.
Uh-huh.
And another of which is help me understand all of the problems in EA, including why is it difficult to have high integrity, as a prerequisite to improving them.
So now that we've done a zoomed out look at this problem set so far, what's the biggest leap in your mind right now?
All of them? I feel like... It's like we've got a map with one coastline, like one bit of coastline on one side and one bit of coastline on the other, and nothing is connected in the slightest. I think fundraising $1 billion sounds hard. You sound confident, but so we have to wrap up here for time reasons. I'd like to say thank you to EA Infrastructure Fund and many donors on ManaFund for funding this project. We're now fully funded for the 5 episodes. We really appreciate it, you guys.
Yeah, thanks so much.